And welcome, everybody. It is December 7th, 2021. This is our weekly AMA with Cal and or roundtable, but it's not very round today because Mitch is flying out of the country, going somewhere tropical, I think.
Small table.
Like a rectangle. we'll answer your questions and then discuss whatever we got going on. Right now, the thing that's going on is the crypto market has been bipolar. Let's see what we got there. So I am monitoring YouTube. We got the chat on the live stream there. Twitter is still has this weird thing where, I guess you can reply to the tweet that has the video in it. We got a couple viewers there already. I will try to make sure I'm monitoring that. Where did my Telegram go? So I am in the Telegram chat. If anybody has any questions there on the Cub DeFi channel. And of course, we're in the Discord, where most things are. Cal, you are still muted in the Discord, just so you know. So you addicted mute, and I'll be able to hear you. All right. So I believe we are ready to go. Not too much built up from last week. In the general chat, there's the usual chorus of when this, when that. When Project Blank, when Polyca, when what's the thing that we're waiting on? IDO number three, I guess.
Number two.
So wasn't Polycub one of the IDOs and now it's not?
Right. So I guess what's kind of interesting in DeFi land is that IDOs are still good, but there's a lot happening in the airdrop, space. Mm-hmm. And we kind of saw, if you want to rewind the tape to when this all started, Uniswap did the first kind of real DeFi airdrop, like the big one.
And by surprise.
And it was a pretty good surprise for most people. Like I know for me, I got a few of the Uniswap airdrops on a couple Ethereum addresses. So it turned out to be pretty good for everybody. And obviously the price went up. So that if you rewind to the history, you see that. And then you also see like the vampire mining with SushiSwap and kind of the history of DeFi, I think will always be kind of studied in terms of how it all started and gained adoption initially. So with Polycub, we decided that it would be better to do an airdrop. To get to that model, we kind of pulled from a lot of different things. And one major one was the Splinterlands SPS airdrop, which obviously exploded the entire game, which was awesome to see. I know Neil's happy about how that all turned out. So
I'm pretty pleased.
So we basically looked to that. We looked to a few other airdrops and a few other DeFi platforms and looked for, what can we do that could be, the best way to launch Polycub. So that's where we kind of transitioned from, okay, we're going to do an IDO to, and the IDO was going to burn 100% cub. So, you would put in one cub and it would basically evolve. So I told a couple of people about it originally and they said, it's like Pokemon because you're like evolving a cub into a poly cub, which is essentially what we were going to do, where you burned a cub to get, XYZ amount of poly cub. So instead of doing that, we're doing the airdrop model over 60 days. So you'll get Polycub every day, and there's a daily snapshot for 60 days based on your Cub holdings. So obviously Cub Kingdom, and then the Cub LPs. So it's just, I think it's a more interesting model and it's more engaging. And obviously I think the main reason why we're doing it this way is because we think it's the best thing for both Cub and Polycub in terms of adoption and TVL and price, obviously. So given all those factors, that's why that is an airdrop instead of an IDO. And I think airdrops are getting even more interesting. I know IDO number two wants to do something with an airdrop too. So I guess that'll get interesting. And they're talking about, you know, because they don't have. So I guess this kind of answers a previous question in the AMA. So it might be good to just kind of run over this, because the IDO number two has a small audience and a small group of VCs. They don't have much of a community at all, like Leo Finance. So they're considering, you know, different airdrop methods to basically gain community and gain traction. So I gave them a few ideas, and one of them was to airdrop, obviously, to cup holders, and then also to airdrop to hive holders, which I think would be kind of interesting. Because, you know, with Hive, you get that engaged community, and you can kind of get that initial traction. And I think there's some interesting things happening actually with Hive airdrops in general. There's two major airdrops coming for Hive holders. So I think it'd be kind of interesting if IDO number two can kind of put together a little model and airdrop to Hive holders and kind of slip into that slot. Like, cause you got those two airdrops coming for Hive. And then if IDO number two kind of slips into a slot where it might even be able to get out before those other airdrops, and just kind of ride the hype of those, I think it could be interesting in terms of them getting adoption. And then obviously that's still incredibly good for cub holders who maybe participate in an IDO for that platform, and then also will get airdropped those tokens too. So, and then they're also doing the, you know, if you want to go even further, they're doing the cub dash IDO token LPs. So they're creating a farm that has cub in it against their token. That's kind of how the IDO is going to work. And then we're creating a kingdom that goes off of that farm. So there's a lot of interesting kind of overlap. So we basically want to see their token gain as much adoption and value as possible, because it'll kind of carry cub with it. So that's kind of where that's at. So I guess I kind of covered IDO number two as well.
Okay. So with the Hive airdrops, you know, there's the free speak airdrop. What's the other one?
I think there's some game or something by They Call Me Dan. Someone might correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't really read into it. I just kind of know what I've seen from Twitter that there's two. I know there's two airdrops. I think the other one is some game, and They Call Me Dan might be involved.
Okay.
Addicted definitely knows. I don't know if he's listening.
Yeah, he's three speak. We got that one. Ragnarok.
And Ragnarok.
I guess Ragnarok could be the game. NFT game.
NFT game. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that is that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, airdrops are great. You know, airdrop farming is now a thing, you know, where people are positioning themselves in the way of an airdrop or a potential airdrop. Like the latest big one that I've seen is people are speculating that MetaMask is going to have one for anybody who uses their in-wallet swaps. Let's undefin what's up again.
Yeah.
So you know, having the Hive airdrops is great. You know, the question is always, you know, with all Hive-based projects is, you know, do people outside of Hive know about it? You know, I don't know. Hopefully so for 3Speak and Ragnarok. You know, but with the Polycub airdrop, obviously all Leo Finance users are or should be aware of it. A Florian on YouTube is saying HBD sync with airdrop on Hive is this game. I guess that's the Ragnarok thing. So yeah, just getting the word out and letting people know that, hey, you know, there's free stuff coming. You might want to get involved. Right. And you know, for Polycub as well, which is great, and you know, as well, IDO number two here. Yeah, let's do a couple questions. Well, first, any dev updates you want to share? So we all saw the post. Trumpicus number one is talking about the iOS post you put up a couple days ago, saying that you resolved the issue with Apple. So when can we expect to see something coming out of iOS Apple Store or App Store?
Yeah, I think we're gonna see it. probably within the next 2 days, I would say. So we got it approved. So on our end now, we're just basically gonna deploy it. So we shouldn't have any issues there. But yeah, and it took, I don't know how many weeks that took. Probably, I think it's been 5 or 6 weeks of basically going back and forth with Apple, waiting for Apple support. And then the funny thing is we finally had a call scheduled on, and I said this in our last AMA, we had a call scheduled last Thursday to meet with an App Store kind of support person. And then they didn't show up to the meeting. So no. They didn't show up. But the funny thing is that at that time, like literally right when that meeting was supposed to happen, they just approved the app. So basically they just, I don't know, they just scheduled the meeting and then didn't show up, but approved the app instead of showing up, which is really hilarious. So
as long as it gets done, right?
Right. Yeah. We got the job done. So I don't know.
So is it going to be,
the App Store is really funny.
Is it going to be like in a developer section or is it just going to be for anybody who has Apple iOS stuff?
Yeah. We're still pre-version one. So this is all open beta, right? It's on the Google Play Store, because Google Play they just have the Google Play Store. On Apple, it's on Test Flight. So you download it through basically Test Flight, which is super easy to use if you have an Apple device. So it'll be on Test Flight until version one. And then when we're ready with version one, we'll push it to the full App Store. So,
okay.
And so, that's basically just like for Test Flight, it makes it a lot easier for us to push out new builds. So the reason why we have it in Test Flight is so that we can basically get a lot of feedback and then push out builds really quickly. So we can fix bugs and then release some of the core features that we want to do, like full text search and all that stuff through Test Flight before we consider it version one, which is like ready for prime time. And obviously the big one, I'd say the big feature that we're looking to test is the new Leo Infra, which has the Facebook logins and all that stuff. That's all on Test Flight. And then once we're happy with that, then we'll bundle it into version one and then push it out to the App Store.
Okay. And I imagine when the time comes, there'll be a post saying, you know, here's how to get to Test Flight and here's how to do all that. All right.
Yep. And it's super easy. So yeah.
Looking forward to it. On the Polycup thing, you know, so I don't know if it was last time or the time before, you know, you were talking about how there's going to be, an Ohm inspired, liquidity, liquidity bootstrap, you know, risk-free value, you know, people are going to be able to bond into Polycup. And Surya is asking, have a doubt about bonding part or on bonding part. So Polycup will be generated both from bonding as well as from kingdoms. And there's the emission schedule to gradually decrease the emission from 5 in the first month to 1 token after the month. So is this only applicable to the kingdom? So basically it's just, can you give any clarity on the overall, inflation rate of Polycub and how that'll interact between the kingdoms and bonds and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So, with Polycub, the bonding doesn't come from the inflation, ongoing. So it's not like that. Basically the bonding will happen at the early stage of the platform, where you'll be able to bond Polycub LP tokens, and you'll earn Polycub in exchange for those, which is OHM inspired. And when you bond your LP tokens, they get sent to the Polycub treasury, where they basically just sit there forever as permanent liquidity. So that's kind of the initial stage of the platform. There isn't a section of inflation basically that comes out of Polycub and goes to bonding, because bonding will be over once all those Polycubs are distributed. The idea with the ongoing, to kind of answer the last part of that question, the ongoing distribution of Polycub, the emissions rate is going to continually drop every month. And kind of the goal there is that with kingdoms, there's a management fee. So the entire goal of the platform is going to be to grow the TVL in kingdoms. So if we, you know, we continue to grow that TVL, obviously APYs will be really high in the beginning, and they'll stay pretty high for a while. And then they'll slowly drop off every month. And still, I mean, if you look at Cub now, we still beat pretty much every other Binance Smart Chain platform in terms of APYs on the top pools. So if you look at like the Bitcoin BNB Kingdom for PancakeSwap, we're well above the APY that's offered on any other platform. So that's how Polycub will be for, you know, months to come. So our goal is going to be to advertise that and get a lot of TVL into the platform. And the more TVL we get, the higher the management fees. And all those management fees go to the Polycub treasury. And it creates that protocol own liquidity, which is basically, you know, DeFi 2.0. And it's kind of it's kind of interesting because the long-term vision is that what we're going to see is that the emissions rate is continually dropping every month, but that treasury is basically growing exponentially in perpetuity, because it, you know, it's obviously it's growing from the management fees, it's growing from the initial bonding, and then it's growing from all the assets that it holds and pools on its own. So it's kind of interesting, because then when you combine that with the emissions rate dropping every month, you know, look at the platform 12 months from now or 24 months from now, and the emissions rate is going to be super low. And the idea is that the treasury is going to be super high. And then eventually you'll get, you know, to use Neil terminology, you'll get a flippening where the treasury is emitting more APY on its assets than the platform is emitting in actual Polycub tokens, which could be very interesting. And at the very least, what I think we'll see is that there's going to be, you know, that RFV or risk-free value. We're going to see something kind of interesting there, where there's basically a baseline value for Polycub, which can be based on, you know, the size of the treasury and the emissions of the assets that it holds. So basically the APY that it's earning. And what I think will be interesting is that, you know, it's kind of that rune idea too, with deterministic value, where you've got kind of that baseline value based on the assets held in the platform. And then you've got the speculator, you know, the speculative multiplier on top of that, where people are speculating on the future value. And at least, at the very least, they've got kind of this metric to look at with risk-free value, which is kind of getting away from a lot of the DeFi 1.0, where there's not much to back up really anything. So that's kind of where the emissions rate and the treasury kind of combine to create a more sustainable platform, where Polycub will be, you know, a yield farming platform for months and years to come. And that's kind of the idea there. And then obviously we'll innovate with new vaults and different features, like we did with Cub, where we kind of, you know, I mean, if you look at the original Cub versus the Cub now, it's completely different. So it's basically an entirely new platform. So.
So, you know, it's an interesting contrast. So, you know, in Cub Finance, the management fees are buying and burning Cub.
Right.
So what you're trying to balance there is the demand rate versus the supply rate. And, you know, if demand rate is greater than supply, then price goes up. If supply is greater than demand, price goes down. But that's very tricky and very volatile, as we've seen. Whereas here in Polycub, you're saying, you know, we're just continually growing the value that is supporting Polycub, and eventually, you know, that will actually be the majority of the value, most likely anyway. And people will be able to trade just based on that treasury. So is there, you know, in Polycub, is there ever a mechanism for redemption? So if I have one Polycub token, does that entitle me to be able to claim any portion of that treasury value? Or is it just like an unredeemable bank?
Yeah, so I think that's interesting. The initial stage of the platform will not be redeemable. So a little bit different than like OHM, for example. But you know, you can see a future where potentially it is, or with other ideas, like basically the treasury is earning and buying back Polycub on the market. So there's really no reason to redeem against the treasury. especially if, you know, basically there's that speculative multiplier. So I guess redemptions are interesting when the price of the asset is lower than that risk-free value.
So I kind of have
this rough idea about, so if, you know, obviously most of us here are going to be familiar with Hive and HBD. So you can take Hive back dollars and you can do an internal conversion over 3.5 days. And during certain moments in, you know, Hive back dollars versus the Hive price, that's an arbitrage that actually makes sense. And what you're basically doing is you're redeeming Hive back dollars for Hive. So I could see kind of a mechanism that's somewhat similar to that. And there is a little bit of gamification to that because, you know, things can change over 3.5 days and your arbitrage is a little bit thin. So, you know, if things are off by a few percent, then you might lose money, not make money, which is kind of a gamified version of arbitrage. So I think there's some interesting things that we can do on that front. But obviously the goal initially will just be to grow that protocol controlled value as much as possible. And then we can obviously play around with doing different things like that.
Yeah. As anybody who hangs out on Leo Finance Discord knows, my main complaint with HBD is that the 3.5 days is too long if your goal is to create a stable coin. You know, it's fine for 3.5 days would be fine. Because, you know, you're going with like major market trends, whereas a stable coin has to stay, you know, right at, you know, $1, you know, 0.999 to 1.001 kind of thing. But I could see something like that working really well for Polycub. Scaredy Cat is boarding a flight, missing the fun. yeah, you can listen on your phone. It's all right. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, the full unveiling of all the Polycub stuff. This sounds like it's going to be good. And, you know, the 60-day airdrop, you know, that's your incentive to buy Cub and put it in one of the liquidity pools or stake it in the kingdom and, you know, get free stuff. Idiosyncratic is asking, are you looking at developing anything on Arbitrum or Loopring? Loopring layer 2. I don't know if it's actually layer 2, but any more than anything else, it's layer 2. So any other chains you have you're keeping an eye on in the future?
So obviously what I think is going to get really interesting is you know, we've taken, so if you rewind the tape 12 months back in November 2020, we were just kind of getting Wrapped Leo onto Ethereum, right? So we were getting onto Uniswap and we were just kind of venturing off of the, you know, the Hive blockchain. So just kind of just exploring the outside world of crypto from inside the Hive bubble. And what that did for Leo is obviously very good. We kind of went from like 3 cents to 30 cents. We had just taken the first step to go multi-chain by going onto Ethereum and Uniswap. And that's obviously a very basic step outside because we just basically created a wrapped token and listed on another blockchain's exchange. And then what we did with Cub was take that even a step further and build a whole app on another blockchain. And we did that on Binance Smart Chain. And then we obviously created BLeo and then we kind of expanded that way. So now there's three versions of Leo on three different blockchains. So there's Hive, Ethereum, and Binance Smart Chain. And then with Polygon, we're taking that Cub model and we're building an app on the Polygon blockchain and we're building the PLeo token. So we're kind of extending to that fourth blockchain. So what's getting more and more interesting about the crypto space is that this multi-chain future is basically becoming, you know, a multi-chain present. So it's kind of happening right before our eyes right now, where every blockchain is getting a lot more easy to maneuver. So there's more bridges, there's more, basically, you know, if we use the hype words, it's more interoperability is available. So that used to just be a word that everybody threw around. Now it's actually kind of a reality. So when it comes to other blockchains, there are a few that I'm watching, and I think with our whole project, it's going to be important to figure out, you know, which blockchain to move to, not move to, but basically extend to, right? Because you basically just you basically get, you know, you get potential access to a lot more users. So, and our goal, obviously, the Leo Finance mission statement is to expand our depth and width, right? So, you know, we're expanding the depth and width of our user base. So in terms of depth, you know, creating new apps and going to other blockchains creates a lot of opportunity. So with Cub, we created a ton of opportunity for existing Leo Finance users. And then with Wyth, we're trying to get more users, right? So we go to new blockchains and we create new apps and we hopefully attract people back to our existing apps and kind of create that wider community that also has a lot of depth in terms of access and opportunity. So basically moving to multiple chains and moving to as many chains as possible is kind of the mission going forward. And obviously we want to create unique and different apps when we go to a new blockchain. So Polycub is a lot different than Cub in a lot of ways. And then you know, when we go to another blockchain, so I'm keeping an eye on, you know, Terra and obviously Thorchain. We're looking at doing some stuff there. And then, you know, Solana is getting interesting, and obviously you got Avalanche, and then you know, things like Arbitrum. I don't know a ton about those ones. I would say if we're moving to another blockchain next, it's probably going to be Terra after Polygon. So it's just going to be interesting though to take this into the multi-chain future. It's kind of like, you know, we're just kind of like right on the edge, and we're just moving with the moving as the edge basically expands. It's like the edge of the universe expanding, and we're just kind of moving with it. So I think it's just going to get more and more interesting. And obviously Leo Bridge is still there. It needs a lot of work, but I do see a day where Leo Bridge is not only functional, but very easy to use. And you can basically just click a couple of buttons and transfer assets across it. And it's obviously just a series of smart contracts. So I think the future is going to be interesting when we're on multiple chains and, you know, and very functional and very, you know, quick in terms of moving assets and moving, you know, moving not just assets in terms of like financial assets, but, you know, content and other stuff. You could kind of see a way where you could, someone, I think it was, I don't remember if it was you, Neil, or someone else, but someone was saying you could create like an NFT out of a blog post. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot, like you could imagine an app one day where you could take a Leo post and you could turn it into an NFT and sell it on like Binance Smart Chain. And then, you know, one idea is that when you sell that NFT, whoever owns the NFT gets the residual earnings of that post. So there's just a lot of interesting things we can do.
Yeah. You know, you know, like any group of people, you know, crypto has a lot of tribalism in it. You know, it's like the like yesterday we had Craig Wright's lawsuit that he lost, yeah, but won, and BCH went up, you know, 25%, something like that. So there are all these maximalist type groups, you know, for the different chains. But you know, it reminds me of, like, you know, you might not be old enough to remember this, Cal, but in the beginning days of personal computing, there was just your own little camp, and that's all you had access to for community, for software, for anything. But now, like, you know, I'm a customer. I'm actually a paying customer of Evernote, and I've got Evernote on my desktop, a Windows machine. I've got Evernote on my iOS, Apple computer. I've got Evernote, you know, website access, and you know, you can download it on all these different platforms. And I see, you know, crypto apps going the same way, where the blockchains are the operating systems, and they're different. They all have their own unique things, but the user interfacing with an application, you know, should be fairly independent of whatever the underlying architecture is. So it's just, you know, I want to post on Leo Finance, and that can go into Hive. It can go into you know, the Hive Engine second layer. You can go into, you know, this, you know, an NFT on Binance Smart Chain or whatever, and it's just, you know, I'm just doing Leo Finance. It just, right, spreads out to all those different places. Apparently, nafter.io turns posts into NFTs. Okay. Yeah, and people talking about Avalanche has incentive rewards, which is nice. You know, if you're a new project coming to a chain, a lot of times they will kick you over some cash just to, you know, bring people an activity. Florian on YouTube is talking about a whole bunch of stuff with play to earn. So he's saying 2022 will be the year of play to earn. Have you looked into NFT gaming or DeFi for gaming tokens or something like that? Or Leo, yeah. Meta Finance game?
Yeah. No, I definitely think there's a Leo Meta Finance game, you know, around the corner. And there's some interesting things with the NFTs that you would basically gain in that scenario. And those, you know, I guess, like, if you look at really what's happening with Web3 and you know, where this whole ship is going, the community and the basically the base platforms that we have are just going to get more and more integrated. So it's kind of plugging into that multi-chain idea too. But also with NFTs and stuff like that, where you know, you have a play to earn game, but then since we're also like a blogging community and like a social community, those NFTs can have social value. So with things like Leo Mobile, we can integrate NFTs so that, you know, you could have different features basically within the app that are specific to your NFT. And I think that's kind of where the interesting thing is getting with Web3 and how it integrates with NFTs, obviously. One interesting thing with Twitter and Instagram and these major platforms is the blue check, right? So everybody loves the blue check. Everybody wants the blue check. It's like an ultimate status symbol. And all it is a little check next to your name. But what gets more interesting with Web3 and NFTs is that blue check could turn into a lot of different types of checks. And it can basically become this unique identifier for different things. So where I see kind of all social media going in terms of Web3 is that NFTs are kind of going to become that next blue check in basically your social media wallet. So I see, you know, Leo Finance going to the place where we're going to have kind of our own version of blue checks that integrate NFTs, and have, obviously, when you have NFTs and you have the technology that we have with blockchains and obviously just superior technology to Web2, you can do a lot more interesting things with, you know, these unique identifiers. So I do see a play to earn game around the corner. And then on top of that, I see the NFTs that you get from that having more than just, you know, in-game value, but kind of having that more social currency value, since we're a social community at the base layer. So that's where that's headed.
Yeah. That brings up another question for myself is, you know, where are we, if anywhere, on like the community topic managers? You know, so I can imagine.
Yeah.
A community manager for DeFi gaming, and obviously, you know, being on Hive, Splinterlands is a huge. Like if you go on Leo Finance, you can see tons of Splinterlands posts, you know, related to the financial aspects. I could see that kind of thing happening. In, you know, people in the chat are talking about, you know, there's Axie, obviously, Thetan Arena, Alien Worlds, and you know, there's more and more play to earn type DeFi games coming out all the time. You know, for a while, Crypto Blades was huge. I lost a bunch of money on that. but, you know, targeting those communities and saying, hey, you know, come over, you know, to Leo Finance, blog about your stuff here, you know, earn rewards, talk about, you know, find your community, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, is there anything in the works for community managers? And if so, you know, are you planning on targeting any DeFi gaming stuff?
Yeah. So with the community managers feature, we actually started developing it, and then we switched completely over to the mobile app when we decided that instead of developing the UI we've got now, the desktop UI, we're actually going to merge the framework with the mobile app framework, which can be basically reworked for desktop. So then when we push an update to mobile, that mobile update can be a little bit, you know, it basically can be compatible with the desktop version. in certain ways. And obviously it'll take a little reworking every time, but instead of going forward with the community pages feature, because we would have to replace it anyways, we basically just dropped it for now. And then we're just full-time developing the mobile app. And then obviously the desktop app that will be based off of the mobile framework and kind of combined with the existing desktop framework. But I think, you know, we have it all in our roadmap, but I think Q1 of next year is pretty likely for that feature. And it'll obviously be built first for the mobile app, and then it'll migrate to the desktop app. So we're kind of moving a little bit mobile first in a lot of ways. And that's where I kind of think that's at. But yeah, that is kind of the next, I'm just pulling up the roadmap right now. That's kind of our next, like after V1 of the mobile app, that's kind of our next feature that we're going after. Because I do think it's a big deal in terms of, you know, if you go back to the core mission, it's both for depth and width, because it kind of creates that depth where, you know, Splinterlands content and, you know, Hive content and, you know, ThorChain content, stuff like that, where, you know, people on Leo Finance exist, you know, in those communities already, and they want, you know, more content like that. They'll get more value out of having those community managed pages. But then it also gets the width, because, you know, you get something like ThorChain, you get something like Solana, you get something like Avalanche, you know, any of these communities, and you create those pages, and then you can onboard people in those communities. So I do think that's one of the most important features that we're going to be building. And it'll be definitely, you know, I think it'll be probably the first thing we do after V1.
Okay. That's our second date of the AMA. We got a couple days for iOS test flight, and then Q1 for mobile community. Where is it still be called community pages, or?
It might be called something a little bit different. You know, there's a few ideas floating around: sub communities, community pages, you know,
right, well, something like that.
Yeah, something right. Along those lines.
So Q1 for that thing. All right. You know, have you seen the posts from last week with the calendar?
Yeah, I saw a few of those. Yeah. It's funny.
And we all appreciate that you're a good sport about it. but my free BTC is still on the gaming side of things. What about a Leo Finance play to earn guild? So for those of you who aren't in the DeFi gaming thing, guilds are organizations that they've really gone meta lately, especially with Yield Guild Games, YGG, where they say, okay, we have our group, you know, our people, our group of, you know, people who can play games, people who have the money to invest in DeFi games, and the managers who can coordinate things. And we as a group are going to go into Splinterlands. We're going to go into Axie Infinity. We're going to go into Alien Worlds. We're going to go into all these things. And, you know, so they're kind of overarching on top of like a play to earn layer, if you will. And like YGG launched their own token, which last I looked had a market cap of like $6 billion. That might be a high, it might be 600 million, but a lot, you know. So any interest in doing something like that in Leo Finance?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think a lot of this stuff can be taken up by different community leaders and you know, especially when it comes to things like that. And that's kind of where we're trying to, you know, if you look at something like ThorChain, they're taking a very interesting approach of, you know, basically decentralizing every different aspect of the project. So, you know, if you saw what we did with Leo Alpha, you know, JK took over, I kind of started with the idea of Leo Alpha, and then JK kind of took it over, and now he's, you know, managing a Leo Alpha account on Leo Finance and Hive. He's managing a Leo Alpha account on Twitter, and sharing a lot of content every day. So, you know, when it comes to different things like that, I think if we can find these community leaders like JK who can kind of take that thing and then, you know, run with it, that's more of what I would like to see. So if anyone's interested in doing that idea, Because obviously I don't do much play to earn. The most play to earn I have is some Splinterland stuff that I don't even touch. And that's the closest I've gotten to play to earn. I think it would be interesting if shoot me a DM if you want to run with an idea in terms of creating a little play to earn, you know, guild for our community on some platform. Doesn't Splinterlands have guilds? I don't even know.
Well, Splinterlands has guilds inside of the game where it's a group of up to 30 players who are battling other guilds. But, you know, this is like a different category of guild, which is, you know, coming into various games and doing, playing and earning. Florian is saying that, you know, he's looking into creating a guild for 1UP, which I guess is another game that I don't know about. And they'd like to stack tokens like Leo. Already have several devs working on it. So Florian, you sound like you might be the guy. So, you know, go ahead and message Cal.
Isn't that Flowey?
I'm not sure. It's
pretty sure it is.
You know, everybody's different names. I'm pretty sure his name's Florian. So
yeah, but if MyFreeBTC or someone else wants to start up a little Leo Finance guild on any play to earn game that you are familiar with, just shoot me a DM about, you know, best way to go about it, and let's
It is Flowey.
Figure something out.
Oh, so 1UP, you're talking about the tribe token on high. So okay, but yeah, I mean, seems like it's in the wheelhouse. So there's definitely interest there, and obviously, if anybody wants to get involved in Splinterlands, X Chaos is the token to do it. You buy some X Chaos, we'll manage getting you packs without having to worry about things getting sold out.
I'm buying some.
it's my shill for the week, because we got 2 weeks, just under 2 weeks, before we have to close that down for new purchases. So yeah, exciting stuff happening in DeFi gaming all around. But back to some more traditional Leo Finance type stuff. Steve R is saying that, you know, with the expansion to other blockchains, you know, migrating LP tokens or just taking, one of the concerns I have is just having, you know, P Leo, B Leo, W Leo, the Leo supply is not that great. Great in terms of size. So, you know, it might become difficult to create enough depth of liquidity on those other chains in order to, you know, have everything working.
I think, you know, it's kind of funny because if you look at the APY of staking, for example, if you stake BLEO-BNB, the APY right now is 139%. And obviously that BLEO pool has been up since March. So it's been, you know, almost a year, 9 months. It's kind of interesting because even with a high APY, we're struggling to basically, we're struggling to encourage people to kind of migrate to being an LP. And I think we're creating kind of a strong, and we talk about this in a lot of AMAs, but we're creating this strong dilemma where, there's so many ways to earn with Leo. I think someone in the last AMA, forgot who it was, but we were talking about different ways to earn Leo. And then someone right after the AMA put up a post of all the different ways to earn Leo. I wish I could find that. Someone might remind us in the chat. Oh, it was MyFreeBTC. Can you drop a link to that in the AMA chat, if you don't mind? But yeah, he put up a post about all the different ways to earn. There we go. Four ways to generate passive income with Leo. So what I think we're kind of doing is interesting because we're creating this strong dilemma of where to put your Leo and how to put it to work for you. I feel like the more ways that we create and the better the APY, obviously the stronger the reason to not only hold Leo, but buy more of it and then put it into these different baskets. So I know what you're, with, you know, in terms of getting liquidity for P Leo and B Leo and W Leo and potentially, you know, T Leo, if we go to Terra, all these different things that we can do. you know, it's going to be this interesting thing where, and especially with Leo Bridge, you need more USD value on each of these pools to make Leo Bridge viable for big transfers. Right now there's 600,000 in B Leo liquidity. There's about 1 million for Wrap Leo liquidity. And then, you know, when P Leo launches, we'll kind of see what happens there. You know, potentially we'll see, you know, a large amount of liquidity move to Polygon Leo, hopefully from basically staked Leo. And obviously once liquidity starts to move around, you create interesting dynamics, because if a bunch of people unstake Leo power and move it to Polygon and put it in the liquidity pool, then the remaining staked Leo earns more APY for curation rewards than it did when the other Leo was pooled, was basically staked natively. So basically creating all these options is changing the dynamic of APY every single day. So I imagine that when Polygon Leo goes live, the B Leo farm will actually have a higher APY because some people will move to the new one. I also imagine that some people will unstake Leo power and move it to Polygon and provide liquidity too. So that'll make the curation APY go up. And that's just kind of interesting. Like, how many ways can we create where you can earn Leo? And then at what point is the APY so attractive that you feel like you need to buy more Leo and pull it in there and earn, you know, better returns? I'm actually pretty surprised that there isn't more Leo being bought on Binance Smart Chain and pooled as B Leo. I know I've been taking a decent amount of my rewards on you know, different pooling platforms and the kingdoms and stuff, and putting it into B Leo and then putting it in the farm, because, you know, 129% APY is pretty ridiculous. So, you know, if you assume that Leo is going to be anything above basically 10 cents 12 months from now, you'll make money in that farm. And that's if Leo drops. And then if Leo rises, obviously you make even more. So I feel like it's almost insane to not pool when you're making 129% APY. And then obviously you get into those other pooling options and it's pretty crazy. And then Gerber just launched BXT, where you can pool native Leo against swap.hive and earn 160% APY. I think it was last time I checked. So we're just really creating all these different options to earn. And the goal should be to kind of expand the awareness about those options. You know, if we get more people on Binance Smart Chain who aren't involved with Leo yet, to realize that Leo is a pretty stable token in terms of, you know, it's not crashing tomorrow and it's not being inflated to oblivion like Goose DeFi and Panther Swap. But you can still earn those ridiculous APYs over 100%. I think that would be smart.
You're making converts as you're dropping. So, I mean, it's interesting. You know, the internal return for curation is, last I looked, was like 23%, something like that. I mean, it's fun. You have the social interaction part, but I mean, 23. Let's call it 30%. You know, if you're, you know, hitting things just right. You know, versus 120% over here. I mean, that's four times more. So it seems, you know, you said about, you know, making the Binance Smart Chain crowd aware of the qualities of the B Leo token. You know, there's nothing like if a Binance Smart Chain user comes into Cub Finance and sees B Leo, there's no way to know anything about the B Leo token. So maybe that is something to be addressed through whether it's on page or marketing efforts or have you, because they don't know anything about it. John Doe has a related question. So while it's great to expand outside of Hive, don't you think there's yet more value to be harvested within this ecosystem? We'd love to see LeoFi get Hive and HBD leasing out there. So, you know, expanding versus, you know, increasing the community within, I guess, is the question.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you take that mission statement, it really is, you know, depth and width. So can we expand wide? Can we also expand in terms of, you know, core features? So I think, you know, with a lot of the stuff we're doing, it's aimed at obviously both of those. Seeing some people talk about some APY calculations. It's working for me. I don't know if they're maybe they need a hard refresh or something. I do know BSC was having some issues all week, but definitely earlier today.
You know, the past couple of days I've used my SmartKey, it's been really smooth.
Oh, that's good.
I've been really pleasantly surprised.
I did a bunch of transfers yesterday and it was taking like a minute per transfer to confirm on chain. I use Binance Smart Chain every day, and the issues that I have are pretty few and far between in general.
Flowey's saying he's buying Leo because there's so many cool ways to earn with it, to use it and earn with it. Apparently he's getting his dad into it. Let's see. Steve R's converted. Can be buying more stuff. All good. The BXT stuff has been, you know, great. I'm in the BXT swap.hive pool, which I think is the highest paid one. It was last time I looked. Steve R saying BSC just seems to work, even if people say it is controlled. And, you know, we had a conversation last week about about how decentralized is decentralized. But yeah, they were definitely having node problems in the past 2-3 weeks, but they seem to be on track to improving them. There was an upgrade. I don't know if they actually implemented it yet or not. There was an upgrade where they were gonna do real time burning and getting nodes to be more up to date. But yeah, they're working on it. You know, CZ has, you know, billions of dollars worth of incentive to make sure people keep using BSC. And I think we're all caught up. Addicted is saying, can't see the BLEO API. You got to go to Cub Finance, my dude.
The APR. So if you look at the APR, it's 87%, right? If you click that little calculator next to it, actually the APY is 139%. It went up while we were talking.
There you go.
I was saying 129, wasn't I?
So APY versus APR. You got to do your compounding.
Oh, switch. Does that not have the... Well, first of all, it's not loading the APR. Click like home and then back to farms. Maybe do a hard refresh. Yeah, APY. So if you see the APR there, and then obviously there's that little calculator thing. Throw this up. That little calculator thing next to APR will show you the APY, which right now is 139%. So I think it's pretty nuts that more people aren't jumping on that.
Yeah. I've got some BLEO in there. I'm more heavily on Cub than I am on BLEO. That's just me.
Well, and Cub APYs are even better. So kind of interesting there, because the APY on Cub USD is 242%.
Is it really?
It is. Well, Addicted's waiting. He's got 70,000 Leo sitting around doing nothing.
How dare you?
Yeah, when Polycub launches, you'll be able to put it into a PLEO pool and earn probably 1,000% APY at the start.
So. Yeah, it's always high to begin with. And then as more people jump in, then obviously the competition increases.
If you look back to what happened when Cub launched, everything related to Leo Finance mooned. So people say when number go up when thing launch. Because I'm pulling up the chart. We've kind of leveled off in terms of the all-time Leo price. Obviously, we're still doing really well. We were under 3 cents where was this? In September 2020, we were under 3 cents. And now we're sitting at 30 cents and very stable, by the way, at 30 cents. So if you see in February, March of this year, that's when Polycub launched, or not Polycub, I'm sorry, Cub. So I don't know. I think it's, I'm not, you know, I think in terms of, you know, Rollins saying, it would be what, so what you're telling me without telling me is, you know, number go up. So we'll see what happens when the APY for staking Pelio is thousands of percent. Do people buy Pelio and stake it on Polycub? And then obviously the APY is still over 100% on Cub Finance, and I expect it to get a little higher when some people move over to the higher APY, and then they'll obviously even out, maybe above a couple 100%.
All right. I dig it. So, people are saying that they're moving funds to Leo for the PLEO pool and getting in place for the airdrop. So it makes a good point. You know, if PLEO is a really attractive pool, then with a very high APY, people will unstake in BLEO and migrate over to PLEO. But when they unstake in BLEO, that increases the APY over there. So, like all things yield, it's a one thing over here affects the other thing over here.
Right. So and when, you know, Addicted stakes his 70,000 Leo on PLEO and is earning 1,000% APY, and then he looks at BLEO and it suddenly shoots up to, you know, 300% APY because some people unstaked and moved to PLEO, then maybe he needs to buy another 70,000 Leo and stake it on PLEO.
There you go.
So he can have both. Then he can have the best of both worlds.
Yes. Just and that's be what, everywhere. That's
right.
That's the secret.
Just buy more Leo and be everywhere. I think that's the key.
And I think that is the perfect way to end the AMA segment.
Yeah,
I agree. Buy more; it'll work out.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
so I forget who it was. I guess it was Flowey was saying that his dad was impressed with the stability of Leo in the last few days. You know, with the market. I don't know if you want to call it a market crash or what. It's a retracement.
Mini flash crash. I saw Bitcoin hit 43.
Yeah.
42.
And it was one of those spiky ones. You know, it wicked down, liquidated everybody, and then bounced back up to like 47, and now we're at 51 again. So the question is, one, is this beginning of new bear season? And two, how does crypto continue to gain adoption in the face of, you know, this, this volatility, but not just volatility, it's volatility correlated to stock market assets. Cause, you know, on last Friday, it was, you know, Omicron news, people are freaking out. And then, the Evergrande stuff out of China, where it looks like they're going to default again-ish, has people in the financial markets, you know, freaking out. And then, you know, intermixed with all that, you know, Powell is saying contradictory things at Congress. And so, you know, the stock market, you know, was down quite a bit on Friday. And, you know, it looked like Bitcoin was following. And, you know, that follows my general take that, you know, these institutional level investors, the hedge funds and whatever, you know, if they have, you know, they're levered up on equities or bonds or whatever, when they have liquidity issues there and are facing margin calls, they're going to sell off the risk assets like Bitcoin and Ethereum in order to fund the margin calls on the other side. So we're in this weird place where we have it's a correlation, but it's like only correlation in bad times. for crypto, and you know, how do we go forward through that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of fear in the market. So I think it's just all fear based. You know, every time there's a little correction, everybody thinks, oh shit, we're going to zero. And I don't know if that's new market participants, like you're saying, like these, you know, bigger institutions. You know, obviously I think they trade less on emotion than retail, but you know, if you do look at things like that, when the market goes down, you know, some institutions sell some Bitcoin or whatever, you know, they drop the price, you know, 4,000 or 5,000, you know, drop it, you know, 10% basically. And then a bunch of, you know, the newer retail investors think, oh shit, we're going back to 20,000 or we're going back to $5,000 Bitcoin. And then people dump. And then obviously, you know, what happens? That dip gets bought up through oblivion by probably people like Michael Saylor, who will buy Bitcoin forever.
Yeah. He bought 4,000 on this dip, I think, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you look at the smart money, I feel like it's just accumulating. And people like Raoul Powell are saying, you know, the real bull market, I think Addicted saying this too. I saw it in one of his posts. The real bull market might be, you know, more summer 2022. I think Raoul's saying like March-ish, he thinks will peak out. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting. I don't think we're bear season yet. And a lot of people think this is the super cycle and we aren't going to see a bear season for crypto. So I don't really know personally. Obviously, if I knew, I'd be a lot richer than I am. I'd be filthy rich because I'd know exactly what was going to happen. I would short and then buy the dips perfectly. You know, I think that we still got more legs on this bull market. I don't see us ending this without Bitcoin touching 100K at least once.
You know, the big, you know, from a charts perspective, you know, we've got this massive double top going on. That's concerning a lot of people at the, you know, 65,000 area. So, I mean, if you're not fundamentally bullish, the chart doesn't look great. But, you know, charts can change. So, especially with crypto. People used to ask me, it's like, well, you know, this thing happened in the chart. So, you know, what do you think is going to happen next? It's like, well, you know, if you look at traditional patterns, this would be the next thing. But it's crypto. So who knows?
Right. Everything's up for grabs.
Everything's up for grabs. You know, I'm still, you know, my fundamental outlook, and I wrote a post on this a while ago, that, you know, I don't actually care what the price is at all for Bitcoin, because, well, one, I'm not doing leverage trading, so I'm not susceptible to flash crashes and getting liquidated and whatever. But, you know, my time horizon is, you know, 20, 30 years on crypto, where it's either, you know, people still find an alternative asset that is out of the control of governments to print and inflate or lock down or what have you, or they don't. And I think they will. So I think, you know, over the very long term, you know, the crypto can't help but go up. And, you know, maybe it's not Bitcoin, you know, maybe it's Ethereum takes over. Maybe, you know, if you listen to the totally delusional people, you know, maybe it's Cardano that wins. Just crypto as an asset class, you know, we'll continue. And, you know, I place bets, you know, in different areas just to capture those different potentials. So, you know, the only way to stop Bitcoin is to turn the internet off and leave it off, which I don't think is going to work in today's economy. Anyway, Dresden's just afraid of hackers. Well, you got to diversify. Don't leave funds on exchanges. There was another Bitcoin event, wasn't it? There was a Bitmart got hacked.
Yeah. Yep. I think I don't remember how much it was. Maybe 2 billion or something.
Yeah, but that was also Friday, I think. So it was, you know, a whole bunch of bad stuff happening. Addicted saying 200 million for that.
200 million, yeah.
Some said 100, some said 150 million. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, not your keys, not your crypto. That's rule number one.
Yep.
Bitbart, the most trusted cryptocurrency trading platform. That's right. Trusted by the hackers, too. So I onboarded a guy a couple months ago into DeFi and got him on Cub Finance. And he, you know, when I was onboarding him, so he went through Coinbase and he said, okay, you know, transfer from Coinbase over to your MetaMask wallet. And then we were talking about bridges. And at the time, we could go through Binance, which obviously doesn't work anymore. And he was asking us, like, well, why don't you just, you know, transfer from Coinbase to Binance and just, you know, go direct instead of going through MetaMask? So it's like, well, one, stuff screws up. Two, you know, not your keys, not your crypto. So fast forward a couple of months, he says that just out of the blue, he sends me a message. He says, oh, thanks for telling me, you know, about, you know, holding my own funds, because he onboarded a friend of his and his friend, you know, lost, I don't know how much, but lost something by keeping funds on Coinbase and then got, I guess it was a social engineering type hack, lost some funds there. But the downside is, you know, you're responsible for your own stuff. Like, so I'm running into this with the X-Chaos. I've had three people in the last like 48 hours come into the Discord and say that, like, oh, I transferred my X-Chaos token to my Splinterlands to my Splinterlands account and it didn't show up. Like, well, there's nothing we can do about it. So they sent it to a different account, Steam Monsters account, and now they just have to raise a support ticket with Splinterlands and wait for them to send it back, which I think they will do. But, you know, it's obviously going to be a low priority item for them. So hopefully they get it in time for their pack distributions. But, you know, that's the other side of the coin with crypto, is that you take responsibility for your own funds.
Yes. So, decentralization has a cost.
It certainly does. But, you know, I guess is the answer just education? Learning how to operate your own stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you want to be, if you want your hand held, go buy some Bitcoin and hold it on Coinbase. If you want to get superior returns and more security, if you do it right, then start learning how to set up wallets and, you know, air gapped wallets, hardware wallets, you know, dive deep into the space. So, you know, I've talked to a lot of, you know, I do a lot of in-person things nowadays, like with, you know, conferences and teaching people about Cub and showing them, you know, earning APY and stuff. And a lot of people that I talk to are just holding Bitcoin on Coinbase and then they learn about stuff like Cub and they see, like, oh, you know, people are holding Bitcoin on this platform and they're actually earning something for it versus like they're holding on a Coinbase in Coinbase's wallet and earning nothing. Which is another approach too. Like I said, if you want to get your hand held and not worry about it and maybe sleep well at night knowing that Coinbase hopefully has your back, then that's your approach. But if you want to, you know, go over to something like Cub and, you know, stake some Bitcoin, I think, what's it, 12% for staking just Bitcoin by itself, or 24% for staking Bitcoin BNB. And then on Polycub, we're going to have, you know, Bitcoin ETH as a kingdom. So, you know, obviously there's trade-offs to being more deeply involved in the space. And I think that's just, you know, that's risk reward. It's basic lesson in risk reward.
Absolutely. You know, I've talked to a couple wealth management types about crypto. It's like, oh yeah, you know, we do crypto. You know, we custody with Fidelity is what that they use a lot, because, you know, Fidelity is old trusted platform, has all the stocks and bonds and ETFs and whatever. And now they have a crypto division, I guess you call it. And it's like, to me, it just blows my mind, because it's like, so you take, I mean, and they just do like Bitcoin and maybe Ethereum. It's like you take Bitcoin, which was invented as this permissionless, you know, feedless, or not feedless, but permissionless, gatekeeperless asset. And now you have given it over to Fidelity, who I'm sure are not going to answer your calls at, 4:32 in the morning on Saturday. You've kind of stripped all the crypto-ness out of it by using these platforms. But to them, I guess they don't care. It's just another financial asset, and it'll do whatever it'll do, and they'll be happy to have their hand, I suppose. But it just flies in the face of the whole thing to me. And like Steve are saying, what if governments outlaw it? Crypto. I guess he was talking about my long term horizon. It's like, yeah, they can outlaw it, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I heard someone talking about that on a podcast recently. That an exchange can go down, and then what happens? That basically his point was, crypto has reached a tipping point where it can't be shut down, because you shut down an exchange, what happens? Another exchange pops up. You shut down Binance to non-KYC users, and what happens? You have exchanges like Mandala and other options that gain more traction, which is probably just Binance under a different name. you shut down a country shuts down Bitcoin trading, they outlaw it. What happens? Capital flows out of that country and they flow to a country, like El Salvador, where they're pro Bitcoin and pro crypto. So we've kind of, his point was, we've kind of reached a tipping point where, any one country can try to outlaw it, but then another country will say, oh, hey, your country outlawed it. Come over to our country, and we don't outlaw it, but we actually give you tax breaks, and we, do all sorts of, benefits for you. Do countries become corporations in this sense? Like, as in it's a competitive capitalistic landscape. I think that's kind of where we're headed. And I think we're kind of already there in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't see crypto getting outlawed is basically my point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, countries have tried, capital flight protections, by enacting different laws and things, but that only works in networks they have control of. And even then it doesn't work that well, because, India had recently, like within the last few years, they had, I forget the exact ruling that they made, but they ratcheted down tightly on gold coming into and out of the country. And gold is a very traditional asset used in India for savings, even amongst, the lower economic groups. People kind of did it anyway. So some got caught and some didn't. I don't think they'll be able to have anywhere near as much success in a computer network exchange of value that doesn't require them to interface with the banking system at all. So new times, and countries will adapt positively or negatively. And so far in El Salvador is the positive case. I saw a tweet when El Salvador first announced that they were using Bitcoin as a contender. It was kind of like a timeline of Bitcoin deniers, if you want to use a term. And it was like, oh, well, that's just a scam. It's like, oh, it's only used by drug people, and then it evolves over time. It's like, oh, it's just small countries, but it's gaining, and I think one of the major limitations of people who are in crypto, they've seen 2017, they saw the rise from 800 to 20,000, and now we've seen the rise from 3,000 to 60,000. And that's great gains for everybody who was in it, but it's still relatively small. And it's the evolution of getting entire countries on board is a slow thing. So just be patient. Stack Sats and stack Leo and stack everything else for whatever the future holds. And PH is saying,
so what do you think of the Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, PH was saying Leo announcement of Polycup is going to shoot Matic to the moon.
Yeah, I was about to ask you. So you know, we obviously we have our eyes on Polygon, and we've been, I mean, we've been using it for months, but we've obviously got Polycub around the corner. And Matic is outperforming the rest of the crypto market right now. So, you know, they're basically pushing all time highs on Matic while the rest of the market's trading down. So what are your thoughts on Matic, you know, in terms of price? And you think it's a good buy? Do you think, you know, it's overvalued at $2.30, or, you know, what are your thoughts on it?
I don't think it's overvalued. You know, it's the question of Matic is kind of the question of all L2s, right? So the what is it that they are going to do to attract and then keep users, you know, to their platform? And I think the killer move that they've done is actually their NFT integration with Ethereum. So you can mint, I forget the exact mechanics of how it works, but I think you mint NFTs on Polygon, and then they automatically will bridge, if you want to, over to Ethereum. And that has been a lot more attractive to the Ethereum crowd than a lot of these other layer twos that are much more isolated. And with people saying, you know, 2022 is going to be the year of DeFi gaming or play to earn or whatever, I think they're putting themselves in a good position there. Overall, I mean, the network works relatively well. You know, people are talking about the nodes are in terminal state. You know, they have an auto switching RPC, which is really cool. What is that one? Just bring up my MetaMask here. Get my network settings. Matic. I've got so many networks here. Yeah, polygon-rpc.com as your RPC, and then it will hop on the different nodes, you know, to whatever's working best. So, you know, the only weirdness with Polygon is that, and I've mentioned this before, is that they have a whole bunch of DEXs on it, and it creates a lot of arbitrage at random times. So like if USDC over here is trading at, you know, 98 cents and over here it's trading at 1.03, then like out of the blue, the network, the blocks just fill up, you know, reducing that arbitrage with all the bot traders. So you can run into gas issues that way, just because, you know, it's not like there's some reason that a regular user would know that at this particular time, you know, you have to increase your gas fee. But, you know, it does flush out eventually, and, you know, that those moments typically only last, you know, 10 minutes or something like that. So overall, you know, I'm a fan. They seem to be doing well.
And, you know, if you had to predict the price for Matic,
I have no idea. Let's see.
You think it can hit $10 in this bull market?
I mean, it could. Yeah, if we get a new high in Bitcoin and, you know, people are going crazy and all that kind of stuff, absolutely. Yeah, so we're at 235 right now on CoinMarketCap, which is basically all-time high. And it's a much more steady-as-you-go kind of all-time high compared to the previous high back in, back in May. Where it hit 245. So yeah, I mean, certainly could if it gets some more apps and some more traction and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's interesting with OpenSea. So, you know, we talked about airdrops earlier. Somebody who's not doing an airdrop is OpenSea. Everybody thought they were, and now they're going to IPO apparently, which is sort of a slap in the face. But, you know, OpenSea already has integration with Polygon. You can buy NFTs on Ethereum, you can buy NFTs on Polygon. So, you know, if that gains some, you know, like you can imagine a scenario where OpenSea IPOs bring some more mainstream type of interest and attention. And then they come over and they say, well, Ethereum, well, what's this other thing? You know, what's this Polygon thing that's listed on OpenSea? So you might see some interest be generated from there. And what's up is sad. I don't know why. Yeah, you guys, if you're having node problems, just use the auto switching node, the RPC. Oh, what's up, one on the OpenSea airdrop? Yeah. Yeah, me too. I actually sold a Voxy yesterday that I've had on the market forever and finally sold because there was some additional Voxy news that I don't even know what it was, but I just saw that there was a headline about it. So, you know, overall, I'm pretty down on NFTs outside of Splinter Lands, but that one is working out. Oh, they're launching with Binance. Oh, yeah, I think I also saw Coinbase Pro, something like that. But, yeah, things evolve. So what's your take for the next leg for crypto? Are we headed back up to all-time highs? Are we chilling out at 50?
I think we're pushing all-time highs this month, personally. Okay. But I do fall into the camp that we're going to push all-time highs, hopefully 100K by the end of the month, by the end of the month. And then I think we'll see a big, big dip. I've kind of been following, you know, different people like Rao Powell, who are, you know, these different macro traders. And what I think is going to happen is we'll push that all-time high, and then by the end of the month, you know, these different institutions and you know, bigger firms, you know, they're, you know, and the people sitting on these trading desks, their goals are a lot different than you know Bitcoiners and crypto enthusiasts who are, you know, in it for the technology, but also, you know, in it for the long run versus, you know, trying to get a good P&L on their, you know, quarterly sheet and, you know, trying to get a nice bonus. So there is kind of a more cyclical nature to their strategy. So by the end of the year, and then obviously people are going to owe a huge tax bill, for next year. So I do think we see an all-time high, and then I think we see maybe a huge dip, you know, maybe 38,000, maybe 20,000. I'm not really sure.
From 100 to 38 or from here to 38?
I think 100 to 38 is pretty possible. And then what I think is going to happen is that we'll trade sideways for a while. And then, you know, I think Addicted thinks the same thing, and people like Rao Powell, you know, 2022 summer or, you know, March-ish. You know, spring, basically, we'll see a new all-time high, and we'll kind of see I think Rao Powell says a face ripping rally in, you know, around March, February timeline, which would be, you know, I think he's calling for like 200K Bitcoin or something, at that time. So I think that's very possible.
Yeah. It's possible. You know,
I
do agree.
Yeah, where do you think we're headed? December to summer, where do you think we're at?
December to summer. I'm a fan of like the maximum pain theory of markets. So I kind of feel like we'll drop a bit and stay flat, and then, you know, we'll have the distribution events, you know, El Salvador keep buying, Michael Saylor keep buying. But then the weak hands will finally give up, and then we'll hit the highs. Now, I do agree that 100,000 is going to be a huge psychological resistance point. Tons of people will be taking profits there. So, you know, it'll be tough to get through that in one shot. It's more likely we go up, touch, come back, get base, and then, you know, progress again. But it's crypto, so you know.
Right. Anything can happen.
Yeah. And idiosyncratic talking about Fed increasing interest rates, tapering. I don't think it's going to happen. I think they might get like one or two rate hikes, and then the stock market freaks out. They're like, oh, something else happened. We can't continue tapering because, you know, it's just impossible to unwind without crashing the broader markets entirely. So what's up says, no, it's getting late. Love to hear your thoughts on taxes and holding NFTs versus crypto. Yeah, I mean, it's a giant mess. So that's the bottom line, you know, the I mean, fundamentally, the Congress and by extension the IRS think trading crypto is the same as trading stock. And if that's how you do it, then it's fine. You know, you buy on Coinbase, sell on Coinbase, they produce a report, you submit your capital gains on your Schedule D, and you're fine. But once you get into anything else, I mean, things get, you know, way more complicated, you know. So, you know, under the position statement that the IRS has put out over the years, they are saying it's property, right? So if I exchange one piece of property for another piece of property, that is a barter exchange, and you know, have you know, potential capital gains implications. So, I mean, that raises all kinds of weird questions when you get into smart contracts. It's like, okay, I sent Cub into the Cub Kingdom. I received a token back, you know, in my wallet that has zero value. What does that mean? Did I trade for zero? You know, did I make, you know, a loan? Did I, you know, do all these things? So a lot of this stuff just doesn't work with the old models of financial transactions, because it's not just financial transactions. It's, you know, it's finance combined with, you know, like a smart contract is a piece of software that nobody owns really, because it's published on a blockchain that operates in cyberspace, you know. So it's is that an international transfer? I don't know. So I mean, it's a giant mess, and you know, there is no real answer at this point in time. You know, over decades, you know, case law will emerge and all these kind of things of, you know, how different things are treated, but that's always reactive, it's always behind. And as blockchain continues to innovate, then there'll be new things, and you just have to, you know, make your position, you know, internally consistent, and just do your best, basically. When it comes to NFTs, you know, somebody yesterday or something on the Swiggerlands Discord was talking about maybe NFTs are collectibles, and collectibles have a 28% tax rate in the US versus other things. So like gold coins are usually collectibles. You know, does an NFT really satisfy that? I mean, some might, others wouldn't. You know, it's a complicated space, and it basically comes down to do your best. You know, you want to make a good faith effort to comply, and you know, they are. I like this image you dropped in the chat. So yes, I bought crypto dick butts for 0.2 ETH and exchanged them for 3 winter bears. So, yeah, it's do your best is the bottom line. You know, part of the Build Back Better legislation is they want to hire 87,000 IRS agents over the next 10 years. So, you know, obviously the goal there is to capture more tax. And I saw an article that pointed out that's like, okay, you want to spend however many billions on audits, but you're only spending like a fraction of that on education for how to do taxes and what to do. So maybe your priorities are kind of messed up again. but I mean, the chances that, you know, a government auditor comes in and understands anything about, you know, DeFi stuff is pretty low. So obviously they'll go after lowest hanging fruit first. You know, people who are just, you know, saying, oh, you know, I didn't earn anything this year, or, you know, the IRS publishes what's called the tax gap analysis. So the tax gap is the difference between what they collected and what they think they were owed. And the number one thing in the tax gap is people who have, you know, their own businesses, like sole proprietorship, and within that, the mileage of their usage of their vehicles is like the number one category of all those things. So, you know, expect to see, you know, assuming those agents are hired, expect to see a lot more mileage audits coming in. But, you know, as far as DeFi stuff, it's, you know, do your best. That's my advice.
Just print out all of your Ethereum, just go to EtherScan, go to BSC scan, go to Polygon scan and print out all of your transactions. And when you get audited, just say, here you go.
There you go. You know, just giant. Figure it out.
Paper. Maybe you could do better than I did.
Pretty much. It's just insanity. I mean, like, on an average day, you know, I go to Cub Finance. I collect Cub from four places, from four kingdoms, because I'm in Cub Kingdom, I'm in Cake, I'm in SPS, and I'm in Bitcoin. And so I collect all those. I then have the Cub, and then, you know, depending on the day, maybe I'll swap it for BTC. Maybe I'll stake some more in the Cub Kingdom. If I swap some more for BTC, then I go over to Belt and, you know, put the Bitcoin, the wrapped Bitcoin into the Belt vault, and then take the Belt vault token and stake it into the Cub Kingdom for Belt BTC. So, I mean, it's just, and that's like a 5-minute thing, and that creates, you know, however many transactions are in there. So it's a lot. And the tools that exist are okay for like the stock trading type approach, but I have yet to see a tool that can really handle DeFi, and much less if you're transferring between wallets or bridging between chains. You know, it's not there yet.
Right, you got a ways to go.
Yeah.
So, official advice: do your best.
Like, we're turning a little red in the crypto market.
Are we?
Well, at least we're giving up some of the rally this morning.
It's just rude. well, still up 4% on the day. No. All right. So I gotta run. I gotta eat some lunch. I think a good place to wrap it up here. Thanks everybody for coming out. Everybody on YouTube, everybody on Discord. We do have some comments from people on YouTube. You know, I would say throw those into Discord
the next week.
Yeah, and absolutely, we'll catch up with you next week. Oh, so we're sticking with the Tuesday at 11 Eastern time.
Yeah, are you good with that?
Yep, works for me.
Cool. I think Mitch will be back next week, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure how long his trip is, but
but
maybe he'll be back.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you guys next week. And, we may have a curator chat this week, probably in the next couple of days if it happens this week. So.
Okay.
We'll either see you guys at the next AMA or we'll see you for the curator chat this week.
All right. Just give us some notice when you do those, because the last one was we're doing this.
The last one was it was a test. It was a live beta.
Live beta. Okay. All right. We'll catch you later, guys.
See ya.